Welcome to the Awakened Man Podcast, where we promulgate that your physical, psychological, and financial health are your true sources of wealth that must be safeguarded and optimized to achieve long-lasting happiness. Here, we'll discuss tactics on how you may self-actualize to reach the pinnacle of authentic masculinity by embracing true libertarian principles, arming yourself with red pill knowledge, as well as implementing the most up-to-date holistic health biohacks to optimize your health. Stop being a blue pill sheep, being led to slaughter by big government and the court system. Become an awakened man. Here's your host, Gregory.
Hello, everybody. This is Gregory, and welcome back to another episode of The Awakened Man, a repository for holistic health, red pill awareness, and ultimate freedom. We have a guest today. We have Jude Sandoval. Yes.
And I like how you said it. It sounds more exotic. I didn't use that.
The last guy, Jude, I interviewed here, I mispronounced his last name too, because it was, I don't remember now, but yeah, I mispronounced it because it wasn't pronounced the way it looked like it was going to be pronounced. But either way, Jude is the podcast host of, and YouTube channel of The Divorced Dadvocate. And so I wanted to bring him on to talk about the plight of the divorced man, radical feminism, what it's doing to intersexual dynamics, and talk about online dating. We'll just talk about whatever you want to talk about, Jude. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
I want to say thank you for all that you do and all the information that you put out there. The more information that everybody has, and specifically men, the better armed we are to make good decisions in our lives. So I appreciate it, and hopefully I can add some value for your listeners today.
Oh, no doubt you will. And I think, you know, the idea that there's too much manosphere or red pill content is idiotic, because I mean, can't be over inundated. You know, people are going to have different perspectives and different angles and takes on things, but either way, we all kind of have the same goal, and it's really converting men to seeing the way things are and helping them, protecting them, giving them safeguards from the court system and all that. So I mean, that's what I see as my goal. I mean, I think we talked about this because I was on your channel, how I don't feel like we're going to make like a societal fundamental paradigm shift. And we can talk about that here if you agree or disagree, but I think it's just one man at a time, you know, and it's when do you catch them? And lots of times it's right after divorce, you know, that's when they become more open to kind of the way of women and so forth. So I think we're just grassroots.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it all starts with one person, and you can have a ripple effect. And I share this with my daughters all the time. Every single time you have an interaction with somebody, you're having some sort of impact that can be positive, that can be negative, and you have a choice as to what you can do. And you never know what that impact's gonna have on the rest of the world. Yeah, so absolutely, even if one person gets value out of this today, it's gonna be well worth it for me.
Yeah, I mean, you could be planting a seed that's gonna bear fruit later on. So let's just tell us your story. Tell us, you know, where were you born, and you can go from there.
All right. Well, so I grew up in the Midwest outside of Chicago, and grew up a pretty fairly standard middle-class kid with a mom and dad, married, traditional family. Dad worked, mother was a housemaker, had a little sister as well. Grew up in a blue collar neighborhood, pretty diverse neighborhood, had lots of different friends from different ethnicities, and you know, generally had a fantastic upbringing and childhood, and what you might describe as just really kind of that iconic type, you know, middle America, middle class, mid to late 20th century upbringing, which was great. But you know, you scratch below the surface of anybody anywhere, which I think is an important thing, and it was an important thing for me to learn in my life in my adulthood. And there's challenges. Everybody's got challenges, and everybody's got things that they're going through and working on. And for me, that was a lot of work around masculinity. And I had a mom who her father was a severe alcoholic and was not kind to her or her mother. And so she literally hated men. she hated men, and why she got married, why she had kids, you know, it's hard to say, but you know, it was part of her journey, but she just did not like men, and she did not like my father, and you know, and in return did not like me as well. It was mentally, physically abusive, and so that was kind of set early in having to work through and deal with that stuff. So fast forward through my relationships, well, not really fast forward, but kind of what my challenges were is I had this one perspective of a mother, you know, the one person who's supposed to be protecting you and nurturing you and bringing you up, that just was just pounding into my head all this badness about me, about being a male. And then
was she explicitly like,
oh, she'd just say something like,
horrible person, or you're going to destroy people, toxic patriarchy. What was she saying?
Yeah. Oh, you're just like every other man. I mean, that would be your guarantee, her go-to one, or you're just like your father. And you know, and my dad, you know, it was an electrician, hardworking. You went to work, got up early in the morning, came home late at night, but was just kind of just absent. And
I wonder why. You know, he was being henpecked by your kooky mom, so he'd probably just check out, and he would dread going home, right? Men can talk about this all the time. Like, they don't want to go home. They stop at happy hour. There's guys that'll just stop a block away from their house and just stay in the car for an hour or binge on food or drink alcohol because they just don't want to go home. The dread of going home to the woman.
Absolutely. And that was exactly the dynamic. And it was hard for him to get close to us because my mom was the homemaker. She was with us all the time. And then that was just her tool. That was her tool to be able to keep control of us. And when they ultimately did separate and divorce, she kept us from him and did all the standard
parental alienation
things of alienating us against our father. And you know, that was all stuff that I had to work through, and eventually before he died I did. But you know, there were a whole bunch of challenges around that, particularly because I just innately had an immense amount of masculinity. I grew up an athlete. I competed at a very high level, Division I, won national amateur championships. So I was always trying to balance this. Oh, you know, I'm, you know, kind of have this atypical masculine energy about me, but this is bad. So you can imagine as a kid, and then in your teens and in early 20s, and trying to grasp around this, and then trying to have relationships, and you know, understanding what this something that is natural. And I know you talk about it, I talk about it all the time, just as natural. Masculine energies and the differences between masculine energy and feminine energy. There's not one that's better or worse. They're just different. And when they work together, it creates a fantastic dynamic. But understanding what those are is incredibly important. And I think that's something that gets really lost in conversation these days.
Well, because you see so much discord nowadays because men are wussified and women are masculinized. And so I think both sexes lament the fact that we don't have traditional gender norms. I think women decry the fact that men are beta, for a better word, and men are like, why are women getting all roided up and wearing tattoos and not wanting to, you know, cook and clean and all these things and be calmly and kind and obedient? And women are like, where are all these guys who cry in rom-coms and are not manning up and all these things? And certainly there's different reasons for it, but I think both sides are upset by the fact of that. And I think intergenerational trauma, which you talked about with your grandfather, you see this so often, how we receive the burden of previous generations, right? Our great grandfather was an alcoholic or sexually abused our grandfather. So then our grandfather has to take in that trauma. He doesn't know how to handle it. So he turns to drinking, or he beats his wife or beats his kid. And then his kid inherits that. And then we get it. And unless you know the trauma, it's so hard to end the cycle, because you'll bring that dysfunction onto you, and then you typically will give it to your kid unknowingly half the time. You don't even know that you're doing it.
Right. And that's, you hit the nail on the head, is that breaking that cycle, and I talk about this all the time, being consciously aware and breaking the cycle. And you also mentioned that when men go through a divorce, it's a really fantastic opportunity and time, because there's a lot of soul searching, because men ultimately, I feel, go through a lot emotionally and mentally in the divorce process. And I don't feel like there's as much support there for boys as well. So you're kind of feeling around in the dark. And that's one of the things that led me to start mine is I've been divorced 8 years now, and it's been really challenging to find places to get support, to really get some kind of understanding around what I'm going through, and just help men, whether that's, you know, the court system, attorneys, or relationships. It's there's some stuff out there, it's all disparate, but there's nothing that's very cohesive and there. And so, and that's why I support and I appreciate people like you and others that are doing this, the work around, and it is really, you know, I don't have to tell you, a labor of love to do this work and share this stuff and talk about it, because this is just the tip of iceberg of what we're doing today and talking and sharing about it. It takes, you know, reading and understanding and learning and self-work and so much other things that go into raising your own awareness about this, and then taking the time to share it with other people. So,
yeah, I think going back to what you said, how there's not a lot of resources, I mean, I think this is intentional. I think there's like one male battered shelter in the United States, but there's thousands. You know, a lot of them are funded by feminist groups and leftist groups, but there isn't a lot of sympathy for men, because, I mean, you can even go back to Esther Vilar's classic 1973 work, The Manipulated Man, and she talks about seven ways men have it harder in the world than women do. And partly it's just there's no sympathy for men because we're essentially human ATM machines, you know, and a woman's love is really based on what we can provide. And we can be easily discarded. And I think a lot of men just don't understand this principle. And so when let's say a man is being abused in a relationship, and statistically it's about 40% of the time, we always think it's, you know, 95-5, there's not a lot of sympathy. Because like when a man tells a woman or his family, I'm being beaten by my wife, it's a taboo topic. And then typically the woman or the family will say, what did you do to deserve it, right? That's a shame tactic. You never hear it the other way around. If a man is beating his wife and the wife, you know, tells people about it, no one would ever say that to the woman.
Right.
But we say it to the man all the time. And like you said, there's very little resources out there, because ultimately we are expendable. We are expendable assets. And this is something that Vilar talked about in 1973. And she was vilified by the Gloria Steinems and the third wave feminists at the time, because she talked about women have the option to work. Men have to work, right?
Right.
Women don't have to work. Men have to go to war. Women right. don't have to go to war.
Right.
Men never see their kids because they're the ones working, and the women are the ones who are always with the kids. So they never get to see their kids. Men live a shorter life, so they die sooner, never seeing their kids, and then the woman benefits and inherits all the money. So she talks about all these things way back in 1973. And so I think that's one of the reasons that 70% of suicides are done by adult men, is because nobody really cares about men.
Sure. No. And I like, you can even take it back further, just biologically, and men have been over the ages more expendable. And that's just part of nature and part of biology. And that's, and I like to do, I like to look further back, because we can talk about the dynamics of what's been created now and what all the narratives are, et cetera. But you can really look back to some of this stuff, like the energy, the masculine, feminine energies, and those tendencies. They've tested those. It's a given. We know what those are. You can go back. You can look biologically. We have, I think, something like 2 or 3 times more female female relatives than we do males, because men were expendable, and the men are expendable. And that was okay. And we've never complained about it for centuries and centuries, right? That was just the way it is. We went out, we did what we have to do. And men and women, until really recently, mostly got along in this dynamic. And the reason why is because we're simply trying to survive together. So it was working together around around how do we keep ourselves alive? How do we feed ourselves? And then with our children, how do we keep our families functioning and keeping them surviving? So, but we've gotten to this point now where we're really comfortable. It's the very few that have to worry about basically eating on any given day. And so now we've just let our minds go. And then it's become this whole creation of men and women against each other and this and that. And I really don't feel that. When I can go deep with other men, when I can go deep with other women and talk with them and just get down to some basic needs and wants, they're all the same. It's connection, it's love, it's wanting to have somebody to be with, to work to, you know, work towards goals together, have families, et cetera.
So then why do women initiate divorce 90% of the time if that's what they ostensibly say, that they want marriage and they want it to work?
Well, there's definitely all those, the biological things like hypergamy, where women are always looking to, you know, to make sure that they are going to be taken care of and protected. So, you know, in back in tribal days, that was if they were looking to stay with the man that was the better caregiver, the one that brought home the animal to eat or provide for the family, that was going to be then. That's the same thing now. So it's a good perspective for men to keep and to understand when they're looking at when we talk about those masculine and feminine energies, because what happens, I feel, in our society now is men, and I struggled with this immensely, obviously, because of my background with my mom and having some of these feminine tendencies that were just, you know, pounded into my head, learning and understanding as a male, you know, how I should be, you know, keeping frame, if you want, or operating or staying true to those masculine tendencies. And when I get asked the question, why did your marriage fail sometimes? And, you know, and this is a good one. And we can talk about this later about dating too. If you ask a woman this, and it's all about what her ex was and what the problems were and why he was a nightmare, run as far away, because there's no accountability, because it takes two people, you know, in the marriage. But so for me, I really lost my way in my masculinity and my masculine energy in leading my marriage. And so that is why it ultimately failed, is because of that. So if more men would know and understand these dynamics and how they want to operate, because a ton of this, and you know this, is happening at the subconscious level that women may or may not know, but more often than not, don't know what it is that they're wanting or that they're needing. And men need to be in tune with that masculine energy and their masculine energy and how they need to be leading in relationship, leading in general. It's a masculine trait, and that's where we're seeing this. And you mentioned it just a little bit earlier that we're seeing men that are, you call it beta. I just call it that, not in their masculine. They're just not fully in their masculine energy, or not working in their masculine energy and working more in their feminine energy, which is okay if you know what you're doing. I have three daughters, and I'm a single father, and there are many times I have to be in my feminine energy in order to care and nurture them just in the house and the nature of the dynamic that I have set up with them as a single father without a spouse or anybody else around. But I'm aware of that.
I think some of the issues like we mentioned before, for either tons of reasons with the breakup of the family the last 50 years and with the advent of no-fault divorce and a lot of men being raised by single moms, so they tend to be more people pleasers because they lost their father, or their father abandoned them, and they don't want their mom to abandon them when they're 5 years old. And so they tend to be overly ingratiating toward the female. Sure. And so you see this played out when they get older. So you have what we call, the wussification of the man, or you could say men that are more in touch with their feminine side. And so they take this into marriage. And then you also just see with the Disney programming, right? We get on bended knee. oh, woman, you are the catch, right? The apotheosis of the women. And so men already kind of have this paradigm, this thought that they need to worship the woman. Plus, they're coming from an effeminate background, and women aren't attracted to that. They're really not attracted to that. And, you know, there's definitely MGTOW channels, but there's also masculine, a lot of masculine podcasts, masculine YouTube channels, where men, married men, encouraging men to regain their masculinity. And I think that is great, because when a man loses frame, and more often than not, I would say 90% of married men are what I would call beta providers. And either they were always beta or feminine or obsequious and fawning to women, or perhaps they were more confident in alpha early on, and you lots of times see women kind of convert them to it. Or the man just starts failing all the shit tests, and then he blinks, and the next thing he knows, he's the effeminate doormat who's getting walked over by the woman.
Or he gets lazy.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's exhausting to be married and pass all these shit tests that you don't even know that they're shit tests at the time. You blink, next thing you know, you're very feminine and beta. She's not attracted to that. She'll start disrespecting you. She'll start raging at you, you know, whatever. And then she might initiate divorce for a more masculine man. So I think all these factors play a role. And this is just from the male side. We're not even talking about the female garbage that she's bringing in. Right. So I think we definitely need to return to masculine traits. I just don't know, given the strong forces that are coming from single momness and all the kids being raised in broken families, plus social media and what it's pushing on us in Hollywood and all these things. I don't even know if we're going to go back to that point, but I definitely think it's a major problem either way. And women would lament the fact that there are just so many wussy men.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think we're at the one end of the spectrum now with whatever wave of feminism this is that we're in. And I think we will come back to a more stable equilibrium at some point. But it's going to take effort. And everything that you describe and all of the premises upon which MGTOW and some of the other movements are based, and all the data and the statistics and everything you just described is absolutely true. But so for me and in my heart, I want to fight for it. I want to fight for it. I want to, and it is a fight. It really is. And it does take an immense amount of effort to do this. You just described relationship takes immense amount of effort. So does work. And so does keeping yourself healthy. Everything takes an immense amount of work. And so that's just for me, that's just life. So when I hear men complaining about that, complaining about, well, she's shit testing me all the time, or, you know, there's something that I feel that you're not doing, that you're not in your masculine. There's something that you're missing, that you're not paying attention, that you need to figure out in order to, you know, to get that back to equilibrium. Just like if you're exercising your body and something may happen, you may get an injury, something gets out of whack. There's a reason why that happened. Your form might have been poor. You may not be doing something properly. You may not be, your nutrition levels may not be right, et cetera. It takes paying attention and trying to figure out what it is.
See, so I think it's a laudatory, the advice that you would give married men, that they need to maintain frame or get back their frame and regain masculinity. Yeah. Coming from a MGTOW perspective, I would say that at that point, since he's already signed the marriage contract, and given the way that it's very difficult to make women happy due to their solipsism, I think he's losing a battle that he likely won't win. That's not to say that we shouldn't want men to regain masculinity in their marriage, because they're more likely to have success in the marriage. But if they've gone and failed all the shit tests and the woman is walking all over them and raging on them, which is typical of what reaches that point, can he get back to that? Maybe we should listen to him. Maybe. But the problem is she has all the leverage, because at any time she can initiate divorce, which we know because of no-fault divorce and the creation of the welfare state. It's so tempting for her. Once she feels like she's no longer happy, you no longer make me happy, you know, all the kind of aphorisms that she'll use. At that point, it's hard. So look, if you're a married man, I would tell you, yes, men, regain your masculinity. If you're a divorced man, I would just say go MGTOW. And I think that's where you and I would disagree when we talk about dating, is I would exhort men to not remarry, you would tell men probably, and correct me, I don't want to speak for you, but you would probably tell men, remarry, you know, find the unicorn friend, find the right woman.
Yeah. So I've been thinking a lot about this since our last conversation, because we probably agree on about 99% of everything that we're going to talk about, except for what to do once, you know, when you're single. You would say, stay single. And there's absolutely a ton of arguments that support that. However, what we were talking about earlier is, how do we break that cycle, a generational cycle, or this cycle that we're in now, where everything out there is just, and I would say it's anti-man now. It's not even just pro-women. It's anti-man. So all day long, from the time we wake up until the time we go to bed, we're hearing everything that is anti-male out there. How are we going to break this cycle? And if we don't break this cycle, what is left for society in the future? What is left for our children and for their children in the future? And while all of what you argue is true, the easy thing is to walk away. The hard thing is to stand up and fight for all of that. And so I would just fall on the side where I want to go out there and I want to fight that battle and make that effort no matter what, because I know that there are other women out there. I know that I see it, man. I just see it innately in my three daughters, their desire to just have that balance to just their natural feminine tendencies.
Sure.
And so I know that it's there. If we're not teaching that to our boys, if we're not teaching that to our daughters, then, you know, what can we do?
How old are your daughters?
My daughters are 14, 12, and 10.
So you would probably raise them to be virtuous, to prolong their virtue and their virginity. Absolutely. As long as possible, treat men with respect, support men, you know, support your husband when he's having a tough time. And, you know, I think we would both agree with that. Again, if we know 70% of second marriages end in divorce, I feel that we're just leading men to the slaughter by encouraging men to remarry. And this is one of the problems I have with PUA guys on YouTube, is they're like, oh, if you learn this one pickup thing, and we can talk about online dating, but you learn this one word, you know, you've seen these videos, right? These really good looking guys. Yeah. And there's so many of these, you know, low sexual market value guys, or maybe guys who've never had luck with women, that, you know, they buy these products and they want to use this pickup stuff because they want to get laid, and they've never got that reinforcement that they're attractive and all that. And I totally get that. But the problem is that these men are just eventually going to get dicknapped by these women and end up getting married, and then they're probably going to get divorced statistically. And then now we're dealing with more men that are dealing with PTSD from dating, PTSD from marriage. Some of these are going to kill themselves. And I just feel like encouraging men to believe that marriage is worth the endeavor, especially in you know, understand this. I'm not really talking to 22-year-old guys who don't have kids and not be married, but I'm talking about 42-year-old guys who have been married and already have children. I just think there's absolutely no reason to encourage these men to re-sign the marriage contract when they incur all the risk, and really what benefit are they going to get? And I just think that we're serving men better by telling this demographic, don't remarry. Now, we can talk about what's the best thing to tell the 23-year-old guy, but middle-aged men with children, I don't see the point of them remarrying.
Sure. But so what I would say to that is a couple things. Again, it's going to be a challenge, and we're always working on refining and getting better at something. So yes, the marriage may not have worked the first time, but this, you know, statistically speaking, traditional families with a mother and a father and children, everybody fares better.
Sure.
So if I'm working backwards from a goal, which I like to do as opposed to this like psychotherapy thing, which is, you know, we'll just go along and talk about things. If I'm working backwards from a goal and I'm trying to figure out the best way in which I want to enrich my life, and working backwards from that traditional, I need to go and I need to do the work. And you talk about this and I talk about this. We need to do the work in order to get ourselves to that place. And you talked about perfectly, a lot of men don't have the skills to go out there. And that's why this pickup artist and the game theory and all this stuff is so incredibly popular. And I've struggled with this in working exclusively with men in not wanting to get into that whole like dating dynamic thing, because that's where, you know, they just want to figure out how to get laid and et cetera. But just like anything in life, the work that it takes to develop yourself, whether you're becoming an athlete or a business or whatever it else, it's the same thing in relationships. It's the same thing in learning how to be with a woman, and you've got to put the time and effort into that. So if you haven't done and you've backslid into a relationship and you screwed it up, hey, look, if you fail at business, do you just go quit and go hide under a rock? If you fail in the gym and with your health, or you have take steps back, you just quit and give up and don't? I don't. And I understand it could be easier too, but what are we teaching? What are we teaching our children then? And what are we teaching our young boys if we do that? So what am I teaching my daughters if I just say, hey, you know what? It was a great ride. I loved your mother, and the best things that have come out of this relationship, outside of all of the incredible personal development that I've had, is you three daughters. But I just don't believe in marriage, and I'm not going to go out there and I'm not going to look for it, because my message is absolutely opposite to them. Because we have this conversation, I have this open conversation, and it's so interesting. They are absolutely the best sounding board for me, because I don't have to tell them, I don't have to explain all of this masculine feminine stuff to them. It is just innate to them. I basically need to stay out of the way. I need to keep my frame or keep my masculine energy and be my masculine energy as their father. And they just naturally pick up on this stuff and understand this stuff. And so when we do have the conversations, I say, yeah, I believe in marriage. And they'll ask me, especially my oldest, 14, she's like starting to think about dating and whatnot. Well, would you get married again? Well, yes, I would get married again. But, and I explained specifically to her why the marriage with her mother did fail and why and what I'm looking for now. And that's important. But that takes an immense amount of time and conversation with a child at every level of raising them.
But Jude, I think it's praiseworthy that you push the idea that men should work on themselves, because that's a MGTOW principle, right? Purge your demons, purge your addictions, absolutely, be more masculine. The problem I have with that mindset is you can only do so much to fix yourself. You're not fixing the second half of the equation. And this is women, and women have the court system. The court system isn't going away. The solipsism isn't going away. The narcissism isn't going away. So yeah, a man can work on his frame and regain his masculine energy. And great, he can get remarried. And will that lessen his chance of divorce? Sure, sure, absolutely. But as long as women have the court system behind them, it's just lemmings falling off the cliff. It's just lambs to the slaughter. And I just don't feel like I should encourage men to, yeah, be more masculine, work on your demons, we agree on that, but go resign the Faustian pact. I just feel like we're not benefiting anybody at all by telling them that.
Well, I agree with you 100% that they need to be aware of the risks. You need to know what the risks are. And people don't talk about that, especially around the second marriage. And that's why originally we chatted and why I wanted to chat, because that's important stuff to know. And that's important stuff to know because, you know, men just, we get delusional and we get like, oh yeah, I can figure it out and it'll be fine and I'll just go. And I did the same thing. I got divorced. I started dating again. I'm like, hey, I'm just going to fix it. I'm going to replace it. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to do it. That's what we do, right? We're men. We're going to fix it. We're going to get better. And then we're going to do it. And so being armed with more information, absolutely, positively true. But I just can't give up on something that I believe has the best benefits for the greater good. And because of that, and so, you know, there's this a concept, it's called like sacrificing and commitment, and being, you know, committed to sacrificing whatever it may be in your life in order to have a greater outcome, I believe is there's no better meaning that you can find in your life to working towards that. So that can be anything. That could be business, you know, that can be relationships. For me, it is relationships, family, marriage, and restoring this this idea and this betterment of that the traditional family is the best way in which we can go about
but Jude, society. Jude, how are you going to restore that, though? How are you going to restore it? As long as we have the welfare state, women are always going to be tempted to break up the marriage. So you're not going to get rid of the welfare state. You know, there's not enough men's rights activists out there to fix the welfare state. So as long as we have the welfare state, you're talking about how are we going to have kids in the future? We're just going to have more of an epidemic of single moms because of the welfare state. So to me, you saying, well, we got to work on our side. I agree with that. But again, you can find the most trad-con, traditional conservative of women, the unicorn of unicorns, but it doesn't matter how trad-con she is because she knows that she's got the court system on her side to back her up at any time. So I just feel it's what's the definition of insanity, right? Repeating the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And that's why I feel it's like if we're encouraging men to remarry, you're just encouraging them to get fleeced because, again, the stats don't lie. If the divorce rate of second marriage was like 25%, I would say, okay, guys, if someone was going to tell you this plane crashes 25% of the time, the odds are okay. But 70%, I just don't know how we're serving men by telling them to remarry when we can only fix ourselves, but we can't fix the women. The women on the online dating market are just it's detritus what they are. So fix yourself all you want. You're not going to fix her. You're going to get fleeced. You're going to have the gray divorce, and you might not recover.
Well, there's nothing I can do to argue against the statistics other than to say that there are 30% that are working, and the 30% of them are doing something that is right. And perhaps and as men, we need to lead this change. So I feel that we've just sat back. And I think a lot of us have sat back because we're a little bit confused about what's going on with women. And I think women are very confused also. And I feel like we really need to take the lead and move back into this. I can't argue, Gregory, with what's the statistics that you say, but what I can say is then what hope do we have? I mean, what hope do we have if we are not fighting that battle, if we're not saying, hey, you know, this might be an uphill battle, this might be a challenge, this might be an immense amount of effort, this is going to take a ton of sacrifice on my part, but I believe in this, and I believe this is going to better my children's lives, etc.
I agree, but how are you going to fix the woman?
We can't fix it, but we have to,
how are you going to marry? You're not marrying a rabbit. You're marrying a woman. So if she comes in messed up beyond belief, you can go into the second marriage with the most noble of intentions or the first marriage. But if she's messed up, there's no hope. Well, I mean, it takes two to tango.
Not getting involved with and marrying her in the first place. So, you know,
not marrying who? Every woman on the planet.
That messed up woman that you're talking
about. But most women are messed up. Well, most women are messed
everybody
up.
Everybody, to some extent, is messed up. Men and women. And look, I'm not.
We don't have the court system to destroy the woman. They can destroy us at any time.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. There know the risks. Know the risks.
But you would disagree with me. You think the risks are worth it?
Yeah.
And I would say that, albeit absolutely every father wants their kids to be raised in a household with their biological mother and the biological father. No doubt. We didn't talk about it when I was on your podcast, but the stepfather effect. So if you look at kids of single moms, there was a study done in Australia, up to 50 times more likely to be physically and sexually abused. 40 times. 40 times more likely to be physically sexually abused. 50 times more likely to be killed. 15 times more likely to have an unattended accident, like falling down the stairs or a pool drowning. So no doubt when men who have been divorced and their kids were taken from them 85% of the time, they don't like to hear these stats because they can't control the fact that their woman has moved on and remarried another guy or has a cavalcade of Chads and Tyrones coming into the life, because it's the Chad and the Tyrones are the ones that are physically and sexually abusing them. They can't control that. So I don't disagree with you at all. Of course, in a dream world, ideal world, kids are raised by their bio parents the way it was for millennia, right? Yep. But we don't live in 1905, man. We live in a milieu, a landscape of hell. Mm-hmm. A true Hieronymus Bosch Garden of Earthly Delights hell. So I just don't feel like I can tell men, go back into this landscape of hell, because you know what? You can work on yourself, but the women haven't worked on themselves. Yeah. And well, it's probably going to happen again. So, I mean, I think you can have, I'm not saying you have necessarily a Pollyanna view of the marriage, but going back to the 30%, you're right. Second marriage, 30% stay married. Now, what percentage of that 30 are happy? I mean, what percentage of marriages do you know 25 years in are still having sex at least, you know, twice a month, that are holding hands, that are affectionate? It's not a lot. So yes, sure. 30% are married, and then maybe 10% of that are happy. So 90% unhappy or divorced, 10% happy. To me, the odds are not in your favor. Like in Hunger Games, the odds are not in your favor. It's just not worth it, especially if you have kids.
Again, I can't argue with the statistics, but all I can say is there are a ton of things in life that statistically don't make sense to do. Starting a business, majority of businesses are going to fail. We still get people starting businesses all of the time because they know that the sacrifice, the short-term sacrifice, and let's talk about this for the minute, sacrifice leading to greater commitment, because this is something, sacrifice and commitment are just dirty words in our society anymore. And I don't feel that they are. And some of this stuff goes back to biblical principles. And I feel like a lot of this is lost in the secular world that we're living in now, is that creating, you know, sacrificing something small. And we can talk about, we can talk about it just in the terms of fitness, of the taking the time to work on your body. So you could be doing other things, watching TV, playing games, doing whatever, but you sacrifice all of those other things to spend the time to work on your body to stay healthy. And that's leads to something that is much greater in the long run for you than just that short-term sacrifice. So in the realm of relationships and doing the same thing, people have not learned to do that, or have lost their sight in how to do that. And that's something I talk on my podcast often, when we're talking about intersexual dynamics with people and dating and how to date and how to go forward towards creating a foundation for a relationship going forward. And it's an immense challenge. There's no question. Everything you described, Gregory, is exactly why and when a ton of women have not done the work, in this whole fallacy that women have done more work and women innately know more about this and they're more in touch with their feelings, I think is a complete load of crap. Because I think there's as many men, if not more men, that go through this, particularly men after divorce, and which is why I focus right after divorce, especially when they have children, because it creates this whole different perspective and a very deep soul searching opportunity for them. And so that's why I focus in specifically on men after divorce, because then we can reinforce these values and why they got into the relationship they did in the first place and how they can do it better the second time.
Again, then you're leading them back to marriage that has a 70%. Again, it's like, would you get on a plane that crashes 70% of the time? I don't think there's any human being aside from adrenaline junkies who would say yes to that.
So my answer is potentially this is a sacrifice that I will make for the next generation, my children, because I know my daughters are gonna have a complete different idea around finding their partners and what their values are going to be around relationship and how they're going to conduct their relationship growing up. And maybe we move that pendulum back to where it's in a better place in the future. Maybe it's not our generation. Maybe it's not even our children's generation. Maybe it's the generation after, but somebody's got to do it, Gregory. I mean, otherwise what are we just, we're just going to, it's going to like slide down back into the Roman Empire, and the whole world's going to just,
it is going to happen that way, because like at the end of the Roman Empire, we have moral depravity, right? Yeah. And so we can talk about that. That's a good segue into online dating, right?
Oh, but God.
It's moral depravity. And look, I mean, we can tell men, and you and I agree about the whole PUA thing. Men just want to get laid, right? That's all they care about. And that's why they go to these PUA things. Mm-hmm. But I tell men, it's like, no, you shouldn't be pumping and dumping because all you're doing is contributing to the problem. You're just creating more damaged women. And we know that women don't handle sex the same way men do, that they bond more, they release more oxytocin, they're the recipient of the seed, so to speak. And so sex to them is much more meaningful. And so when the men leave them, it's much more detrimental to them. And so this is one of the problems we have with radical feminism, pushing the sex positive movement, telling women, oh, you can have all the sex you want. It's not going to damage you at all. Well, we know that's absolutely not true. And all the studies show that it's not true. So everybody's banging everybody. And so what this causes is like the good girls. So if the good girls know that the high SMV men are being assaulted by, you know, the 90-10 rule, and all these women are just coming on, these good-looking dudes, and these women are going to put out on the first date these thoughts, then even the good girls feel pressure to put out early because, again, they want the Christian Grey from 30 Shades of Grey, you know, good-looking and rich. Yeah. So they're putting out even earlier, even though they feel like they might be compromising their values, their religious values or whatever. So they're putting out. So all the women are putting out early. And if there's ever like a woman who might have good qualities, like some 22-year-old good virtue, and she's going to tell the guy, you know what, I'm not going to have sex with you until, you know, we get married, you know, heaven forbid, like the old days. Mm-hmm. That guy would be like, you know, I appreciate that. I love your virtue. But 9 out of those 10 men are like, I'm out because I can go screw Lola, you know, 2 dates in. So I again, it's like from the female perspective, I mean, we can raise our daughters the best that we can and impart with them as much virtue. But I think our influence as parents, and certainly without the religious background like we used to have, that kind of was a bulwark in American society all through its history, is gone. So we can tell women be virtuous, but then they see the Kardashians on social media. You know, they see Cardi B. They see this trash. And then that reinforced at school, it's reinforced in the Hollywood that they watch and all these things. So unless you're one of these prepper types who don't let their kids watch anything aside from Disney on VHS, you know, you have the VCR, they don't have cable.
Turn Disney off too.
Right. I mean, unless you're raising these, you're homeschooling these kids where they have no access to any pop culture, as much as we want to tell our daughters, be virtuous, that's only going to affect them, I would honestly say, 20% of the time, because feminism, Hollywood, academia, and all of them are telling them, do what feels good, do what you want, enjoy. And they're going to succumb to that. And then they're going to get corrupted.
Well, hopefully they'll succumb to it. The way that I look at it, and everything you describe is absolutely accurate, again, the messages in our society and the structure of the society is an absolute mess. And it's actually designed at this point to go against everything that I profess and that I believe in, and that I am trying desperately to teach my daughters and to teach any of the men that I come in contact with. But I mean, again, what do? We just let it pass. We just let it go. We just let them, my daughters.
I think you're putting too much, and say,
hey, you know what? Here's what you're gonna run into. And it, you know, it's funny because I have had this conversation with my daughters about men in the appropriate way that they should be acting and conducting themselves, and marriage, and abstaining, et cetera. The way I look at it, with all these, I see all of this stuff as an opportunity for me. Every one of these ridiculous holiday Hollywood movies and Disney and pop culture, Cardi B's and Kardashians and all the other crap that's out there to have a conversation. And there's one example we watched, this is like a year or two ago, the Incredibles 2 movie, and Disney. I gotta say, I'm not a big fan of Disney. Disney is just absolutely like crumbling our ethics and morals from, you know, from the tiny ages on, because all this stuff is getting in just totally ingrained in children's heads it's almost abuse in the way that they're putting into these cartoons and these stories, and kids are grasping them. But like the Incredibles 2, I watched this movie with my daughters, and it just was absolutely disgusting because the big superhero dad is this bumbling fool throughout the movie, you know, a la Homer Simpson and
30 years of that,
Griffiths and all that. And when we're done with the movie, we're walking out and we're headed home, and I just said to my daughter, I said, so how many dads do you know that, you know, we're friends with are as inept as I don't remember the main character's name. And they thought about it and they're like, none. No, I mean, actually most all the dads that we know are good dads, et cetera. So we have these conversations all the time around this. So they're consciously aware of all this stuff that's going on. But again, this takes an immense amount of effort. It's something that is at the forefront of my mind all the time, their development. And so my meaning, you know, and we talk about, masculinity and the energy around masculinity and having meaning in your life is another huge thing that I think men have lost in our society. I think we've got, especially the newer generations, just a nihilistic approach to life. Like there's no meaning. Sure. It doesn't matter. I'm just kind of going by. I'll play video games all day and eat burgers. And
well, that's because of the decline of Christianity. You could attribute it to that.
There's all kinds. Decline of Christianity, decline of family, moving, urbanization of our country, the dissociation between fathers and men. There's all kinds of things. And this is all just backslid for such a long time. And the Roman Empire is a great analogy, but again, what are we? You know, we're just going to let it backslide, or we're going to just try to make these efforts? So I'll continue to make these sacrifices and efforts to potentially move this back in the other direction.
So, what would your daughters learn, though, Jude, if you remarry and get divorce raped again? What are they going to learn from that? I feel like you almost want to be a martyr to the cause, when in fact, what you're doing with your podcast and YouTube channel is much more efficacious in helping men and so forth than being the lamb to the slaughter that you would do. And you feel like you have to do that to be some kind of role model to your daughters. What I tell my sons is, look, I loved your mom. We were married. We tried to work it out. Just know that you were conceived in love and it didn't work out. But me being a MGTOW monk, juxtaposed to her jumping in a relationship, let's say 2 months later, 6 months later, whatever it is, because you know women will move on much faster because just their need for security. Mm-hmm. I tell them, it's like, look, I'm never going to remarry. I'm going to focus on what's important. And what's important is you, my children that I had from this relationship. And I'm going to put all my focus, time, and attention that I have with you all 4 days a month because of the broken system. But I'm going to focus all of that on you. I am not going to remarry, because remarriage, the stepmother effect, like the stepfather effect, the stepmother effect, the second wife is classic for putting a wedge between the kids from the first marriage mm-hmm. and the dad, right? Okay, so that's what the stepmoms do. So I tell them, I'm never going to remarry. I'm going to focus on you. And that's what I tell them. And I think that's a good message to tell them.
Are you never remarrying because you don't believe in the principles and the
value I would never of remarry.
Traditional marriage?
No.
I guess I would ask what the message is, you know, specifically that you're telling them about marriage and for them going forward. So I understand what you're saying as to why you are not remarrying, but what is the message that is like prevalent in your household with them going forward for their lives? Because mine isn't necessarily, mine is because I believe in it. I mean, that is a belief that I have. It's not as a martyr. It's not that I do want to be a good role model, but I truly believe in that. And I believe that I can build that. And I believe that I can do better this time than the second time. And I am cognizant of all of those risks out there, Gregory, that you describe. And there's a reason in 8 years, I haven't found it yet, because I'm going to be real specific and I'm going to make sure, I can't make sure, but I'm going to do my best to limit those risks and be part of that 30% or whatever, even if it's 10% of the successes in the second time around.
Okay. So even so, even if you do find a woman that you find is the unicorn, again, she could be great, but the court system's on her side.
Absolutely.
So again, I mean, I just feel like, do you really want your daughters to see you, let's say 25 years from now, broke from the divorce of the second marriage when you're at your peak sexual market by peak income earning? She takes everything. You have nothing. Yeah. Is that really a good role model? Now, going back to what you asked me about, do I believe in traditional marriage? Of course, I believe in the marriage of the Bible. I think most men going their own way, MGTOW men would marry if it was 1434 AD, 1910 AD, before the advent of no-fault divorce, the welfare state, radical feminism, and all the things. So we can step back and say, yes, marriage, if we could go back in time where men had responsibility and authority, mm-hmm. yes, has tons of benefits, absolutely. But marriage in 2020, absolutely not. And see, that's the difference. We can step back and logically say the odds are not in our favor, no matter how much work I do and self-actualize, the odds are not in my favor. So how would it behoove and benefit my children to see me 90%, 80%, let's even say all 30% of marriages that don't end in divorce, the second marriage, are happy? How does it benefit my kids to see that? No, I'd rather arm my sons. I'm going to tell them, look, the system is stacked against you. Marriage is a great institution. And, you know, if you want to do it, you want to do it. But I'm definitely going to tell them all the risks. And I would tell my daughter the same thing. But the daughters know, ultimately, that the system will back them and they can divorce their husbands at any time and get free money.
Absolutely. But we're ultimately responsible for this having moved to all the way in this direction. And so we're ultimately responsible as men to move that back in another direction.
How is it bartering ourselves to the cause helping it back, though?
That is just a masculine trait. Walking away is not a masculine trait. And that is not that is not what we as men should be espousing to anybody out there. That, you know what, I understand, I have this belief system, but it is much too challenging and it's much more of a personal sacrifice for me. And so because I'm analytical and I don't like the risk that's involved in this, I'm just, you know, I'm not going to stay true to my beliefs.
Okay, so this is a classic.
I think that's a horrible message to be sending to anybody. And I will every time take the sacrifice because I know that there is the potential. Look, and it's a lower potential now than it probably ever has been.
Sure.
There is the potential to move that back. And like we talked about in the beginning of the show, I do it once with one person today on this show. That person impacts another, and then we impact a whole host of people that can move this back in another direction.
So you think it benefits your daughters to see you divorced, raped in a second marriage, that you admit statistically has a maybe 10, 15% chance of working out? You think it's going to help your daughters to see their father divorced, raped again? How is that going to help them?
Would it be beneficial for them to see me work through the process of building a relationship?
I think that's great, but it takes two to tango. You need the woman to work on it. But you can't control the woman, though. You can't control the woman. The woman's going to have the court system.
Just like they have been able to learn through my divorce with my ex and see somebody that they would never want to emulate as a woman in their lives, that second marriage could potentially provide to them some knowledge and understanding that is going to assist them in moving this philosophy and this idea forward as well. So I can't speak to what all of the benefits can and will be. I can respectfully look at what the statistics are and the risks, et cetera. But what I only thing that I can do is say, I have this belief. This belief is important to me. I'm committed to this belief. So whether or not there's a risk or there's a sacrifice involved in it, I'm gonna move towards this risk, as fearful or as difficult or as challenging or whatever may come up for me, because I think that this is important. And I know that it's going to have a greater good. I know that it will have a greater good for my children and the people that are in my sphere. That's all I can control at the moment. Unfortunately, our society is as it is right now. Hopefully, it will have a ripple effect. My daughters, their children, their families, etc. I don't know. I can just trust in my beliefs and in my heart and move in the direction that I feel we need to go as a society. And I feel like we're not doing that as men in a society. And that is why we are at where we're at now. Men have stopped standing up for what they believe in and moving in the direction that we need to be moving in. And we see it in everything that we've just talked about and described in the decay of our society right now. And we need to, if we want to stop this, to start pushing back and pushing towards where we want to go and what we need our society to look like. And that might just be doing a podcast like this. That might just be like something small.
I think we're just going to fundamentally disagree with this. And look, the whole idea that of men not taking risks, this is a common shame tactic that's used by like Richard Cooper and Rollo Tomasi and these guys, that MGTOW men don't want to take risk. MGTOW men will take risk in starting a business, in starting a side gig, doing all these things, because you're right, men take risk. But they're not going to take risk on something that they know statistically has very little chance of working. Now, you could use that argument with restaurants, but at least with restaurants and businesses, you're going to pocket all the profit. But with marriage and with restaurants, again, a lot of that has to do with you. You are in control of the choices that you make, and there's really not another person that's in that equation. But with marriage, there is another person in that equation. I understand that you think if you martyr yourself and you get divorce raped, your daughters are going to see that and they'll think, oh, I shouldn't do that to men. But I think you're giving way too much credit to your influence over them, and you're underestimating the preponderant power of Hollywood, academia, and all these other things. And to me, it's kind of like akin to trench warfare. So we look back at World War I, where you'd see like the Germans and the French behind the trench lines, and then they would kick a soccer ball, and then everybody would go across the trench, and they would just mow them down. You know, the machine guns from the opposing side would mow them down. But the guys on each side thought it was a noble thing to do, because they were still using kind of the outline of the Franco-Prussian War, the last real big war, where they were still running and had bayonets and horses and all this. But we look back 100 years ago and think that was suicidal, like the Battle of the Somme. A million men died from trench warfare, just going over the trenches and getting mowed down. And that's what I make it akin to. It's like we're just encouraging men to just get mowed down. And
for the beliefs in those wars.
Well, in World War I, it wouldn't matter, because the German Empire wasn't like nefarious like in World War II. But I would tell you, going back to, let's say, the Civil War. Okay, the Civil War is a separate thing, but 700,000 men died, and you didn't see there being a drop in the population. Like, because all these women lost their husbands, 700,000 Americans in the Union and in the Confederacy. But there was no population dip, because the women just found whatever guy with a limp with one eye not working and bred with him, right? So I just think it's just so reckless to tell men to marry based on a belief on marriage. And I agree with marriage, right? I totally agree with marriage, but not in 2020. No way. Absolutely not. And I just feel like it's just so reckless to encourage men, you know, if you work on your stuff, that's great. But, you know, you might find a unicorn. That's great. You know, but ultimately, you're still giving her a loaded gun when you sign the contract.
Well, there's no question about that. And we haven't talked to the other side about this, about, you know, how to look and what to look for and where to go with this. And it's a challenge. It is most definitely a challenge out there to find that. But, you know, again, for me, it comes down to more of a religious and not religious in the dogmatic principles, but religious principles around sacrifice and life being suffering and working towards not just enduring that suffering, but relieving that suffering through your actions in this lifetime. And so, yeah, so it's just going to be a fundamental difference in how I'm approaching why I feel that this is important. And I'm not just preaching the marriage part. It's not, the marriage is the means to the end of a better life, wholly for you and your spouse, for your children, and for the world in general. And so I'm not just preaching the principle of that, or the institution of that. I'm teaching the greater picture, because even in marrying, there's sacrifice. And I think that's part of what that young couples and young kids that are looking at academy don't look at and don't understand. We're just backsliding into a marriage. And I did the same thing. It's like, you just start dating and you have sex and then you're moving in together. And then all of a sudden you got a dog and bank accounts, and it's like, oh, well, why don't we just get married? And that's not the right way to be doing it, but we don't have this, we have a disconnect with parents talking about this and fathers and mothers talking with their children about marriage and the process by which you date and you court.
Those are all important.
And you look for a potential spouse and then how you conduct yourself in that marriage and the spirituality involved in it. That's just not happening anymore. And so these are all problems. And so it's just not the marriage is just the function to the greater good for me. So I want the greater good, and I believe in going through it by marriage.
So would you tell your daughters to have them sign a prenup when they got married?
When they sign a prenup?
Yeah. Because, I mean, would you demand that your future second wife sign a prenup before you married her?
I think that's fair.
And if she said, no, I won't do it, then what will you do?
That's a great question. I don't know.
But that's the problem. See, because if my point of view, she says no the prenup, I tell her to get the hell out. Because by caving in, that is the biggest of the shit tests that you're failing. Yeah. And you see this, and there's celebrity examples of this, like with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Johnny Depp's sister told him, sign the prenup. She's a gold digger, sign the prenup. He's like, no. And of course, you know, then now they're in court. So I would absolutely say if she doesn't sign the prenup, then I'm out. Because that's a symptom, Jude, of one-itis. Yeah. Of having a scarcity mindset.
Fair. I think that's fair. Consider the way that the system is structured. I'm not stupid. I'm not naive around the risks. I'm not naive about what you talk about giving loaded guns. And I think that's a fair conversation to have with somebody in that, look, this isn't structured in one of our best interests. And this is going to help me feel comfortable with us moving forward. And I don't think that's not a bad conversation to have with somebody. If you're contemplating this and you know that the system is stacked against.
Well, you know it, but the woman's going to deny it. Then the woman's going to throw the shame tactics out. Well, you think I'm a gold digger. You don't think our love's going to last. And then 90% of men cave in. Oh, I love you, honey. Oh, you're right. We don't have to say. Dr. Dre had that problem. He's going to lose $500 million because the same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. So tell your daughters, you know what, daughters, if you want your marriage to succeed, offer to sign a prenup. Don't even wait and see if he asks. Just sign the prenup.
I don't argue that, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. That would be a good, excellent conversation. Hey, maybe that's a new tactic we can teach for women out there if they want men to feel comfortable about getting into a long-term committed relationship with them at this point, specifically divorced men or men in our older age group. That look, this is just how the world is structured. It doesn't mean that we don't love you. It doesn't mean that we don't want a long-term commitment. We just know that these are the risks involved with it. And it's no different than if we're starting a business and we're hedging things in our business that we need to make sure to protect ourselves. And it's more protecting our feelings around what we're doing and being more committed to you, in this relationship, knowing that we're not feeling like we're always walking, a tightrope with a gun to our head. And so I think that's a fair conversation to have with somebody.
I think the problem is that prenups are commonly thrown out. Let's say this is something that is never talked about. But
the whole court system's a cluster. So,
but that's my point, Jude, that the court system is just a gigantic clusterfuck. That why it's like again going back to World War I, walking through a field of landmines that you can't see, hoping that you're not going to get your leg blown off. And I'm just of the opinion once you already have kids, there's no point to enter the marriage contract. Now, what you tell a 24-year-old, might be a little different, who wants to have children, might be a different thing. But I just think it's absolutely suicidal. And I think we're just going to have to leave it at that. And we agree to disagree. So, Jude, where can people find you?
All right. People can find me on my website at thedivorceddadvocate.com, or they can find me on any of the podcast sites at thedivorceddadvocate.com or my YouTube channel at thedivorceddadvocate.com.
I'll try to remember to put in the episode notes because I always forget to do that. But I'll try to remember, guys, to put in the episode notes. But it's an easy name to remember. And it was great having you on. I was on Jude's podcast, I think, on Monday.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So you can check out that if you guys want as well. But I appreciate you coming on, Jude. It was a great, stimulating conversation.
Likewise. Thanks, Gregory.
Take care. All right, guys, I hope you appreciated and enjoyed that interview I did with Jude. I appreciate about the audio being a little off. His audio is very clear, and I only noticed after the recording that the audio on my side was a little loud, so I apologize for that. So I think the interview with Jude was great. I just think it offers a kind of a fundamentally different view, and certainly his view on MGTOW men not wanting to take risk is echoed by people like Richard Cooper and others who kind of echo that same sentiment. And I think it's pretty clear how we disagree. I feel like it's suicidal to do it. And I you can call me more of the cynic, certainly, that I think that the situation that we're in is irredeemable. And all we can do is really just try to inculcate into our kids the right values. And I understand his point of view. Like if we're all trying to instill into our kids the right values, then maybe in a generation or two things will improve. But the court system isn't going to change. The political milieu isn't going to change. The welfare state isn't going to change. It's not going to change. Government only gets bigger. And America is going more to the left, more and more and more and more to the left. And certainly once it's fully left, it's that part isn't going to change. So we just certainly disagree, but I thought it was very thoughtful, and I appreciate him coming on. So guys, if you want to help us out and help defray the cost of the podcast, please donate. There's a PayPal link in the episode notes of this episode and all episodes to donate what you can. Also, I'm an Amazon affiliate, so if you go to naturopathicearth.com in the episode notes, there's a link. Click on the articles and click on the food recipes, and it will take you to one of my food recipes, and you can see an Amazon link. Click on that, and then anything you buy within 24 hours on Amazon, we get a 2% commission at no expense to you. Go buy my two books, Confessions of an Obese Child and Revelations of a Weight Loss Warrior. You can find those on Amazon, Kindle, or paperback. And if you need some one-on-one coaching from the red pill perspective on divorce, you're having problems with divorce, or how to find a good woman, or all these things like that, contact me through the Clarity FM link that you can find in the episode notes or at naturopathicearth.com. And lastly, please post an honest review for The Awakened Man, Confessions of an Obese Child, or The Essential Oils and Google Apothecary. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Awakened Man Podcast. Find us on Facebook at the Awakened Man Podcast page. Subscribe and post an honest review on Apple Podcasts and consider donating to our crowdfunding account. And remember, freedom is better than needle. Until next time.
Music attributed to Nine Inch Nails.